case this morning, which is U.S. versus Hofer.
May it please the court, counsel for the government, Todd Schultz, assistant federal public defender representing the defendant appellant. The district court in this case erred in applying a two-level enhancement pursuant to section 3C1.2 of the guidelines for reckless endangerment during flight. The district court erred because the government failed to prove the defendant's actions created a substantial risk of death or serious bodily injury to another person, and the government also failed to prove that the defendant was aware that he had created such a risk. For the enhancement to be properly applied, the defendant must recklessly create a substantial risk of death or serious bodily injury to another person in the course of fleeing from a law enforcement officer. This court's opinion in Smith makes it clear, however, that not every dangerous act will suffice to meet the standard of 3C1.2, and that the defendant's dangerous actions must create a substantial risk of death or serious bodily harm. The government in this case has failed to establish that the defendant created such a risk.
Well, here, I mean, there's a chase. He looks back at the officers. He raises the gun to his head, says he's suicidal. He takes cover in the back porch of a house. He points the gun at the police officers, and then there are people in the house. There are three children in the house and other adults. There are guns discovered around him. I mean, I think you really have an uphill battle here.
Your Honor, I agree at first glance that it appears that way, but in this particular case, there was no testimony at the sentencing hearing as to this particular issue, and so the court's determination was limited to the facts contained in the offense conduct section, as well as the stipulation of the parties and the addendum that was later filed by the probation officer.
So those facts that I outlined for you that came from the PSR, were those contested? I understand he objected to the application of the guidelines, but the facts that were included in the PSR, those were not contested.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think it's significant in reviewing the court's reasoning to note what the court bases the enhancement on. The court didn't conclude that the enhancement was applicable because the defendant fled from the police on foot while carrying a firearm. It didn't conclude that the act of his putting a gun to his head and indicating he was going to commit suicide justified the enhancement, nor did it suggest that his refusal to follow commands to drop his weapon or his claims that he would not surrender and they would have to shoot him justified the enhancement. I believe the court's reasoning clearly indicates that its decision focused exclusively on the events that transpired on the porch, and the court said that the defendant's act of pointing an unloaded handgun at the police while on the porch of the home, quote, endangered the people in the immediate area through, if nothing else, the possibility that police officers would have responded when he flourished the gun by not firing a taser, but by firing bullets at him. The problem with this conclusion and the reason there was error is there is absolutely no indication in the limited record that it was the police officers who actually saw the defendant flourish the gun on the porch. The last two sentences of paragraph 10 in the offense conduct section notice that as the defendant's on the porch, officers observe the defendant's feet and legs sticking out from the front porch of the house. The defendant was observed to point his gun in the direction of one of the officers who was positioned near the house. The pre-sentence report doesn't indicate who observed the defendant do this, and it is the defendant's position that unless an officer saw him point the gun in his direction, that there was no substantial risk of harm. Ordinarily, the court could make a reasonable inference that it was an officer who saw the defendant point the gun. But given the facts of this case, in the next sentence in the pre-sentence report reads, the officer instructed the defendant to drop his weapon and come out where he could be seen. The court cannot conclude, based upon that sentence, that it was an officer who saw the defendant point the gun in that direction while he was on the porch, because the pre-sentence report makes it clear that the officers could not see what the defendant was doing while he was on the porch. And there's good reason, based on other facts in the pre-sentence report, to conclude that someone other than the defendant someone other than the police saw the defendant point the handgun. We know from the limited facts that there was a witness who saw the defendant fleeing from the sporting goods store. We also know that there were several occupants of the residence who were awake at the time who may have seen the defendant point the gun.
Were they interviewed by the PSR writer?
Your Honor, I think in the addendum it does indicate that the addendum contains the information with respect to the occupants of the house. My impression was, yes, that they were interviewed by the pre-sentence report.
Is there any suggestion that the information that you've just recited came from them? Absent that, it's an entirely reasonable and, in fact, the only logical inference is that the information came from the officers.
Well, Your Honor, I do believe that the occupants of the house and the witness were interviewed and that information is reflected in the pre-sentence report. I respectfully disagree with the court's assessment because how can it be a reasonable inference that it came from the officers when the very next sentence in the pre-sentence report relates the fact that the officers could not see what the defendant was doing on the porch?
I thought the very next sentence relates the fact that they told him to drop his gun.
Well, the officers obviously knew from the chase, Your Honor, that he was carrying a firearm. They saw him running with one. But in the same breath that they say to come out with your hands up, they say to drop your gun and come out where we can see you. I don't think that a reasonable inference is that they could see the defendant when in that very sentence is expressed the fact that they couldn't. And I think the more reasonable inference is, based upon the specific wording of the pre-sentence report, that someone else, other witnesses on the scene, saw them. Because I think the conclusion that it was the officers is foreclosed by the very language of the report itself. I believe this case to be analogous to the case of United States versus Smith, and that was a case decided here in the Seventh Circuit. In that case, the district court judge applied the 3C1.2 enhancement based upon the defendant dumping anhydrous ammonia out of a car window as he was being followed by the police. This court concluded that there was no doubt that anhydrous ammonia is a dangerous substance to humans, but went on to suggest or to conclude that there was no evidence to show that the actions actually created a substantial risk. And the court noted there was no evidence of how much anhydrous ammonia had been dumped. There was no evidence as to the quantity that the thermos could hold. And so there were essential facts lacking in that case that required the enhancement not be applied. And this case is similar because the essential fact for this enhancement to apply based upon the district court's reasoning is that the officers saw the defendant point the gun in their direction.
Well, we have to make a number of assumptions and you parsing this very fine. We have to assume that the comments came from the inhabitants of the house based on the pre-sentence report. Will we find that in there?
Your Honor, I don't think there is information that says the occupants of the house saw this or that the witness who saw him fleeing witnessed it. But what I think the court can't ignore in deciding who saw it is the fact that the pre-sentence report clearly says the officers didn't. The officer says.
Is there a police report attached to the pre-sentence report?
No, sir, Your Honor, there is not. I see I'm into my rebuttal time, so if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder.
Thank you, counsel. Garrison.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Robert Garrison. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Illinois, and I'm representing the government in this case. I guess I would like to begin, unless there are questions from the court at the outset, by kind of coming back to first principles here.
Well, no, let's get to this gun and who saw it, because this was the last point he made, and, you know, he's making a big deal about was it the neighbor, was it the police, it was not really identified. Let's deal with that first.
I don't think it's possible to go any further with it than what has already been said. The pre-sentence report recites that he was seen pointing the gun. It does not say specifically who saw him pointing the gun. I agree with the court that it is a reasonable inference, since they are not identified, the observers are not identified as being the occupants of the house, that it is a reasonable inference that the police saw him pointing the gun. But we can't really go beyond that information from looking to the pre-sentence report, Your Honor. I started to observe that what the defendant is asking the court to do here is find that the district court's finding is clearly erroneous in that it concluded a reckless endangerment during flight from the fact that this man stood on the back porch of an occupied residence with a handgun and shouted to the police, "I'm only going to put my gun down if you kill me." To me, if you come back to the first principles, it's almost preposterous to say that the district court's conclusion that on these facts we have reckless endangerment was clearly erroneous. I mean, viewed from the viewpoint of the police, does it make a great deal of difference whether they see him pointing the gun at the police or not? I mean, it's an occupied residence, and the man is clearly has deadly force. There is case law cited in the government's brief that the police would have been justified in these circumstances by using deadly force. I cannot get beyond the fact that the standard of review being clearly erroneous here seems to fly in the face of these facts. An armed suspect saying, "I'm only going to put my gun down if you shoot me." The people in the house, by the way, it is clear in the pre-sentence report, said that they were scared and that they heard a commotion outside. And that's pretty much all we know about the observations of the people inside occupying the house. If there aren't any other questions from the court, I think the United States will stand on its brief.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The second ground for error that is alleged by the defendant is that the district court erred in applying the enhancement because the government failed to prove by preponderance of the evidence that the defendant was aware that he created a substantial risk. Reckless is defined in the commentary to Section 2A.1.4 of the guidelines, and it's defined in part as a situation in which the defendant was aware of the risk created by his conduct. The evidence before the court is that the defendant in this case was borderline mentally retarded. In reviewing the limited source of facts available to the court, there is no evidence that with respect to this home, that there were any lights on, that there was a car in the driveway, that any sounds could be heard coming from inside, or that there had been any movement seen inside. Without some evidence to this effect, given the defendant's limited intellectual functioning, the government has failed to even establish by preponderance of the evidence that this particular defendant was aware of the risk that he had created. Now, the government does suggest in its brief that, of course, he had to be aware of this risk because he made statements to the effect that they would have to shoot him. He would not surrender his weapon.
How much of this argument was presented to the court during the sentencing that you're making now?
Your Honor, this particular argument, this particular thread of the argument was not.
That's what I thought.
I believe we're able to, because it's within the same gambit of the argument made before the district court. I believe that this court has an opinion which suggests that I would be able to pursue this alternate argument before this court. And so we do believe that there was not sufficient evidence, a preponderance of the evidence, that the defendant was aware that he had created this substantial risk. And for this reason, we would ask that this court conclude that the district court erred in applying the enhancement and that it would vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Case will be taken under advisement, and we move to the sixth case.